And we are back. This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna. This is the Kenai Conversation. I'm Jenny Nyman, and we're talking about philanthropy today. And we've got a couple of, I'm going to call them experts. I don't know if they want to be called experts, but Tammy Murray and Rhonda McCormick are in the studio today. They both had a lot of experience with fundraising, especially locally here on the Kenai Peninsula. And we talked about 100 Women Who Care before the break, which is a program Tammy started. And Rhonda, you were the cash mob, which is kind of similar to 100 Women Who Care. This is a thing that existed in the universe that you heard about and decided to start locally. Now, to be perfectly clear, this is not raising money for nonprofit organizations, but I think the model is still the same. You are asking people to support your community. In this case, it's to support locally owned businesses in the community, which if you take that one step further, those are the guys that support the sports teams and donate to the fundraisers and give the whatever for the raffle drawings and the auctions. So I think it's maybe one step back from, you know, giving to a 501c3. But to me, the idea still feels the same. So can you tell us about the cash mob?
Well, you've typified it very well. It's really about supporting locally owned small businesses. And so we meet once a month at a designated spot. And the purpose of the mob is to infuse cash into locally small owned businesses in one night. So we meet once a month at a designated eatery of some sort. And we're there for about an hour or so. And then after about an hour, I announce the secret shopping place. And pretty much everybody stands up, walks out the door, and goes to the shopping place. And they're asked to spend $20 at the shopping place. They are certainly more than welcome to spend more than that if they would like.
They probably do on most cases.
And through this process, we started in April of 2019. We have visited almost 60 locally small-owned businesses between the community of Soldotna. We go to Kenai occasionally. We've been a little bit out of Soldotna. We've actually went to Nikiski once. And so we've hit a lot of places. And the merchants love it. They get really excited about it. We've had lots of them have given discounts, or they've had drawings, they've given away gift cards, and that's certainly not expected because our mission is to bring money to them. Mm-hmm. I've never asked them to give anything because that kind of goes the backwards of what I'm trying to do. But they've been very generous, and the people that come really enjoy it too. So it's a win-win for everybody.
Do you have to work real hard to recruit new members to, you know, on the idea of like, okay, this is a charitable thing. Yeah, it's for a business. It's not for a nonprofit. Or do you think, you know, have your participants been pretty understanding of, well, small businesses are a pretty important thing in our community, and to go out of my way specifically to support them? Yes, I want to do that.
Yeah, the people that have attended, I feel like some of the people attend because it's something to do that's different in our community.
Yep.
But I know some people attend for the specific purpose of wanting to support locally small-owned businesses. My biggest problem is getting the word out and getting people there. So, you know, I have never achieved my dream of having 50 people at a mob, and I'm always disappointed that we don't. So someday, if anyone's listening, please come to the mob. The Palmer Cash Mob is how I heard about this. And they had over 100 people show up for a mob. And I would probably have a heart attack if that happened. And so would the merchants. But it is just an awesome way of infusing cash and supporting our locally and small-owned businesses. And it happens in one evening. So it's a simple amount of time to invest. You can bring a friend, and you don't even have to sit with the rest of us. People sit at their own tables and visit with their own friends. And then I announce the shopping place, and everybody goes and shops, and they buy whatever they want. And it's a small amount of money to ask. So I keep it at $20, and it's not a requirement. I don't check receipts or what people are buying. It's just a suggested amount that everybody spend to support that business so that they can feel that influx of cash.
And you've been able to keep that going during COVID, too, because people could take out at the restaurants if, you know, when restaurants were closed to dine in, or people aren't comfortable doing dine in. And for the shopping, you've like, okay, well, sometime this week, go and purchase something at this store. So you've been able to have a little bit of flexibility about that to keep the program going.
Right. So when COVID hit and we shut down, I kind of thought the cash mob was going to have to take a break. And I actually had a mobster comment on the Facebook
page. I love that you call them mobsters, by the way.
We're all mobsters. I had a mobster comment and said, well, you know, couldn't you do takeout? And so I was like, yeah, we can. And it actually really facilitated us being able to go to some businesses that I couldn't quite figure out how we could ever visit as a mob.
Because they're too small.
So a good example would be Jersey Subs in Soldotna. Mm-hmm. They have very small seating area. And I couldn't ever figure out how could we do it. I was thinking we could do it in phases or I could have people come. I just couldn't figure out how to do it. Well, this was the perfect way to do it. And when I would pick a day and people could order out or order for delivery anytime on that day. And they were supposed to reference to the business they were at the mob, because I want the business to realize it's not just some random customer. It's mm-hmm. someone who's doing this with a purpose. And then we had businesses that did live sales on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So they would go live on the Cash Mob page and they would sell items. I'm sure everybody's seen them by now, but they would hold up an item and say how much it was. And then people would comment and say, I want that. So we did that for a while. And then as we were coming out of lockdown, we were doing shop anytime on this day, and there's going to be a live sale. And we've kind of done a mix of everything. And we quit doing the live sales for 4 or 5 months now, but the October mob, which is the 18th, plug for the October mob.
Put it in your calendars, everybody.
We're going to meet at Don Jose's. You can start arriving at 5 o'clock. The secret shopping places have announced around 6:20. So you don't have to show up right at 5. You could come at 5:45 and order dinner. And if you don't want to sit for a long time, if you want to come visit with your friends, come at 5, eat and visit and kind of hang out till we announce it. Then we're going to go shopping at the secret shopping place. And then right after the mob is over, the secret shopping place is going to do a live sale on our Facebook page for those who don't feel comfortable going out shopping. So we're going to do a double whammy this month. It's going to be great.
Nice. To me, the feeling between these two organizations is the same, because you're basically asking people to come be charitable and support their community without knowing, like, specifically, you know, which business or which eatery or which nonprofit is going to benefit from that this time, which leads me into what I wanted to talk about for the rest of the hour, which is, how do you get people to be charitable the first time? And another similar in philosophy to your guys' organizations is Pick, Click, Give, which I think we're all pretty familiar with. I think the word has successfully made it out about Pick, Click, Give, but that's another, you know, hey, here's an easy way I, on my own, can support an organization without it being a big, you know, fundraiser or an event that the organization had to put on themselves. And I think, Rhonda, you've been pretty involved in advocating for Pick, Click, Give here locally as well.
I'm a huge advocate of Pick, Click, Give. And what I really am an advocate of is if every person would literally just give $25. If everyone that got a permanent fund dividend gave $25, it would raise millions mm-hmm. for nonprofits in our state. And the amount of people that participate is so low. It's just heartbreaking, because $25 out of your $1,000, I mean, that's like nothing.
Yep.
And it's so easy. And so I really encourage people, again, you don't have to give $100 or $200 or $1,000. Give $25. I think it's the minimum that the Pick, Click, Give program will allow you to give. But if everyone did it, it would change our state. It would change nonprofits in our community and around the state, literally. Yep.
And that, again, is unrestricted funding. So the Absolutely. Organization can use it for whatever they need to use it for. And one of the hesitations I've heard around Pick, Click, Give coming from the nonprofit end of things is donors say, like, well, there's, you know, Pick, Click, Give takes a percentage because they have costs themselves. They advertise the program. They have to take in all of these donations and get them to where they go. And there's the bookkeeping and there's, you know, the vetting of the organization. So there is a percentage that is retained by Pick, Click, Give. But my argument to that is, like, well, okay, but were you really going to send the $25 on your own?
That's the problem with it, is I've also heard people say, well, you know, I don't want to pay that fee. Okay, well, then did you write a check to the nonprofit and send it to them? Most people don't. But the other thing people don't realize is when they donate to a nonprofit online, which that has also changed philanthropy, is being able to go online.
Yep.
You don't get all that money either. If you go onto a nonprofit's website and donate money, the credit card companies are taking a chunk mm-hmm. of that. So regardless of how you do it, that nonprofit is likely not going to get 100% of your donation regardless. So you know, 7%, I think it's 7.5% is what the Pick That Give program keeps. The nonprofit would rather have the other 93% than have nothing.
Right. So how to get people then to take the leap and do Pick That Give or do Cash Mob or do 100 Women Who Care or become a KDLL member or whatever the case may be. I'm curious with you two, do you remember what your first, you know, not because your parents drug you to some event, but what was the first thing that you chose to participate in or donate to? Tammy, how about you?
I'm sure mine was the spay and neuter cause. I can't even watch the ASPCA commercials on TV.
Oh my gosh.
I have to turn the channel. But yeah, I'm sure that was where my first dollars went. And I wasn't like Rhonda. My family wasn't giving. They did not donate. We had 9 kids. There wasn't money, you know, to share with anybody else. So I wasn't raised that way. And to be honest, until I got to this community, I really didn't donate myself much either, except for, you know, some animals at shelters and stuff like that. But yeah, so the community for me was what turned me around and made me realize I have extra money. I can donate to something that I really care about. The problem is there's so many that I care about.
Yep. It's a slippery slope once you start donating to things. So you started with a cause that personally spoke to you. And then I think it's really interesting that it took being part of a community and caring about the community for you to take a step beyond that.
Yeah, 100%. And I do want to say something back about the three things, Pick That Give, Cash Mob, and 100 Women Who Care. The common thread, and you've touched on this, is that we make it so easy.
Mm-hmm.
It's so easy for everybody. And Rhonda mentioned the credit card. I mean, paying by a credit card or online is just makes it simple. And I think that is so helpful nowadays.
Rhonda, so I'm going to go out on a very stout limb and assume that you grew up being aware of supporting your community because your mother was certainly involved in a lot of that stuff. But do you remember, did you do a lot of that stuff as a kid? And what was maybe the first time that you, of your own volition, decided that you were going to support something?
You know, I don't specifically recall seeing my mom literally give money to an organization, but we, of course, volunteered, and I saw her work for Triumphant Theater for many years as a volunteer, many, 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 many hours running their bookstore. But it was just always something prevalent in our family of community living, is you support your community. Part of that is voting or serving your community in some capacity. But I think when it really hit home with me about supporting, me personally supporting financially an organization, is when I started working for nonprofits. And I started to see the impact that one person could have by spending just a small amount of money, but telling their friends or encouraging their family. Or, you know, again, it's not always about a big amount of money. Sometimes if you have a big amount of money, that's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Give that. I don't want to keep anyone from giving a large amount of money to somebody, but that's when it started happening, is when I started working for nonprofits. And when you work for a nonprofit, you sort of become friends with some of the other nonprofits. And so I started to see the good work that so many nonprofits are doing in our community. And it's so easy to see what you can do to support them when you see what good work they do.
Right. Yeah, I think especially when you're new to development, you feel like, and Tammy, you touched on this, you know, having to ask is such a difficult thing to do because, you know, a lot of us are just acculturated to not ask for money, not request things. But, you know, if you go to these development workshops and the psychology behind giving, you're actually giving the donor an opportunity to feel good about themselves, to be connected to their community, to participate in something bigger than themselves. So to think about it in that way, that rather than, you know, asking for money, you're actually offering an opportunity for someone, whether they can only afford $20 or can only, you know, afford to volunteer their time and not give anything, you're giving them something rather than just asking for something.
Yeah, and the first time they give is probably the best for them, but then they're also going to tell a couple people, so it's just snowball effect. If you do it right, you'll get a few more people that are interested, maybe not in your cause, but in the process of giving in the community.
Yeah, I think word of mouth is so important. It's one thing to get a letter in the mail or to hear an advertisement or whatever for whatever fundraiser it is, and especially if you've not been involved in that organization, you have no personal connection to whatever that cause is. It's pretty easy to just go like, oh, you know, somebody's going to take care of that. I'm sure they got some donors somewhere. They got a grant. They're fine. but to have a friend who, like Rhonda, who has needed the services of hospice, mm-hmm. to hear about how important it was in their life. Maybe that's not something you personally have needed, but to know, oh man, that was really important for Rhonda and her family. I haven't needed that, but I could see where my friends and neighbors needed that. It's important to them. So yeah, I'm going to take the step and do that donation. So even if you have no money and no time to give to an organization, you can still be incredibly impactful by sharing what matters to you. And man, I really wish that I had $20 I could give to this cause, because this organization has been really important. And just spreading the word is really important.
Well, and that brings up a really great point is, maybe you don't have $20. That's fine. Write that organization a note or an email and tell them that you appreciate what they're doing. You would be surprised how little encouragement the employees of nonprofits get in their day-to-day life. But I also wanted to mention that there are some really other great opportunities to donate that people don't even know about. And one of the ones that made me think of is when you said, you know, some people, sometimes you need to do something. And what it's making me think of is, you know, if you're of a certain age, you are required to draw so much money out of your retirement
every year.
There is this crazy great deal that people don't know about, that you can take that draw out, give it directly to a nonprofit, and you don't have to pay income tax on mm-hmm. that money, and neither does the nonprofit. It is such an amazing deal that people have no idea about. So if you are looking at a required draw from your retirement and you really don't need that money and you don't want to claim it as income, give it to an organization that can use it. You can also name a nonprofit in your will
yep.
or on your life insurance. There's a lot of opportunities to give that aren't present hand-me-money right now out of your pocket that really won't have an impact on you, or that you don't need to see the impact of right now.
Yeah, and don't ever feel shy about calling an organization and saying, hey, I like you guys, I like what you do, I'm not in a place where I can donate financially, but is there anything I could do to help? I bet you there's some volunteer project, or I bet you they would love for you to spread the word about whatever campaign they have. They will load you down with talking points and flyers to go hang up around town. Man, that call would just make the day of someone at some nonprofit. Even if there's no money from you that you can give right now, there are lots of ways you can still support the causes that matter to you in a community.
And you can even donate items sometimes. I know hospice twice has had people donate vehicles to us for mm-hmm. various reasons. Hospice doesn't need a vehicle, but they approved the idea that we would sell it and keep the money for the organization. We've done that twice. So the last one was from a family who had someone in their family pass away, and it was their vehicle that they didn't need anymore. And so that's another opportunity. And, you know, lots of the nonprofits in town, you know, Love Inc. or Salvation Army, they take items and sell them, or they take items and give them to people in need. So it's not always necessarily about money or time. There's a whole nother opportunity for people to support a nonprofit.
Yeah, KDLL is new to the endowment world. We have our own little endowment. That's so exciting to feel like we're a big time organization. We have sustainability. Yay. And through that endowment, I mean, people can leave us property or vehicles or a boat or like whatever Alaskan thing in their will. And we now have an opportunity to, you know, turn around and sell that and support the organization. And super easy for the person writing that out of their will. They don't then have to get on Craigslist or Facebook or whatever, runs but doesn't drive, $500 I want to donate to charity or whatever. You can just leave that to an organization, and they now have the mechanisms through endowments or, you know, whatever the case may be, to turn that into, you know, cash support for an organization. That's pretty cool.
I want to say one thing about I was thinking about the lack of people. You'll look around at the nonprofits here and you'll see the same people on several boards.
Oh, yeah. So once the word gets out that you're willing to be on a board of directors.
Yeah. So I think that's something we need to try to tap into our younger generation and get them motivated, get them on some of these boards, because, you know, the same 100 people can't be on the boards of all of our nonprofits and mm-hmm. continue to do the work. So I think that's something we need to talk about at some point, is how do we get those younger folks involved and get them out of their normal routines. I mean, I know a few really good kids, but no, I don't think anyone's ever approached them about being on a board of directors.
Yeah. At what point of being a youth into becoming an adult do you start thinking about, you know, our brains are wired to care about ourselves first for a certain length of our, you know, development. So at a certain point of maturity, when you have that first job and you have a little bit of security, you start thinking about like, oh, I'm a part of this community too. I don't just, you know, I don't just look at this community in terms of what it can offer me, but like, what can I offer to my community? So what does it take? Is that something that parents encourage? Is that something employers encourage? What does it take to get especially younger people to think about how they can be involved as well?
I think with younger people, it's tricky. And in some of the studies and things I've read, you don't often capture that younger group because they're getting married, they're having kids,
yep.
Their kids are in school,
yep.
They have a lot of school events and sports and obligations with that. And I think that's why it tends to be an older generation. And that's when I joined. My daughter graduated from high school and I was asked to join a board. And I was like, well, that's just what I need to fill the gap. She's leaving. But one thing I want everyone to think about is being on a board, it's a commitment, but it's not necessarily a massive time commitment. And so, you know, I'm on the hospice board, which I've already mentioned, but we meet every other month. So we're talking about 6 meetings a year. That's not a massive time commitment. Now, of course, I'm on a committee, and the board members should be expected to participate in events. So keep that in mind if you want to join a board. But it's not the massive time commitment you think it is. And if you're a stable, grounded, level-headed person, they need you.
Yep.
Especially if it's a cause you like, that you're passionate about. It's nothing more mm-hmm. rewarding.
Yeah, and I think sometimes people feel like, well, I don't know enough about this organization to volunteer to be on the board. I've not been involved in them before. What do I know? What can I bring to this? Well, that's actually a fresh outside perspective, and someone with a different background and skill set can be really helpful to an organization. Because if it's just people, board members who have been on the same board for 30 years and people who have worked for the organization for 30 years, you're missing out on a lot of, hey, social media is a thing, everybody. And hey, these cool fundraisers or, you know, root beer runs are really great. It often takes someone new and fresh to bring new ideas and to help pivot through the changes that all organizations have to go through over time. So don't let a lack of prior experience scare you away from thinking about being involved or becoming a board member, because often that is really appealing to an organization.
And the organization would love to tell you about what they do. You know, if you like animals, find an animal organization, call one of the board members, or just say, hey, I really want to know more about what you do. I may be considering getting more involved. They'd be happy to meet with you and tell you exactly what they do. And everyone comes with a different skill set, too. You know, a board needs to be well-rounded. They need to have someone on the board that knows something about financial stuff. They need to have someone on the board that can run a meeting.
Mm-hmm.
They need someone on the board who can take good notes.
Yep.
They need people on the board that are just willing to show up, put in their opinion, but really help out with events. And so if you're not a certain one of those kind of people, you don't have to be.
Yep.
Anybody can serve on a board and be very useful to the organization.
Well, we are just about at the top of the hour, so I want to thank both of you, Rhonda McCormick and Tammy Murray, for being here today, and I want to give you both a quick opportunity to let people know how to get involved with Tammy, first of all, 100 Women Who Care. How can they find out about that?
So our own avenue is Facebook, or you can email me at tammyjmurray@gmail.com. But Facebook, we post everything. We have all our meetings posted there. Who we've donated to, any notes would be on Facebook. That would be the best place. I do try to get it out to the radio stations before meetings. But our next meeting is December 30th from 6 to 7. Location will be determined soon. Hopefully it won't be Zoom, but I probably will be in this climate.
Tough to plan ahead.
You know, it's tough too. That date is tough, but Zoom is actually pretty good because you can do it from wherever you're at. So plan on doing a Zoom meeting December 30th from 6 to 7. Check Facebook for that information.
And it's 100 Women Who Care, Kenai Soldotna,
I think is the name.
Oh, Soldotna Kenai.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And Rhonda, how can folks get involved in Cash Mob?
The easiest way is also Facebook. There's a Facebook group called Soldotna Cash Mob, and you can go and join. I put announcements on there. People post pictures when they're at the mobs. I also announce at the chamber luncheons if I go. I know the chamber, the Soldotna Chamber, will announce it on the radio during their morning announcements if they know about it. I try and get the word out the best I could, but honestly, in a small community, word of mouth is the best. And if you know about the mob, if you've come to the mob, tell a friend, bring a friend. The more the merrier. It can have a massive impact on a business, the more people that show up for the group that I run and the group that Tammy runs, the more the merrier. Little tiny impact on the individual, huge impact on the business or the nonprofit.
Well, thank you both for being here. I hope we've encouraged at least one listener out there to think about a cause that matters to them and get involved and support it in whatever level or way that you feel comfortable. And if you are not a Facebook person, do not worry. I will post links to email addresses and ways to reach out to both of these organizations with this audio on our website, kdll.org, because you are, of course, listening to listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna. Thanks for tuning in.